welcome to Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? This millennial's secret banana splitting, dirty safari tripping, underage wine sipping guide to the very special episodes of yesteryear. I'm Jay McCain. With me is Aaron Hubbard. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing good. This is a very, very special episode. This is some rough, choppy waters we're motoring out into, Jay.
We are navigating some choppy waters indeed. I'm in shock a little bit.
If you are a Gen Xer or an elder millennial, there's no fucking way you don't know about this episode, The Bicycle Man of Different Strokes, the smash TV hit from the late 70s, early 80s. This perhaps to be season 5, episode 16 and 17. Too much special for just one episode. And I will say this, all jokes aside, I think this is one of the more successful Very Special episodes. I don't know if it succeeds as a sitcom, but I think it does a pretty good job at putting down things for people to pick up.
I agree. I don't want to spoil anything, but on that basic premise, yes, I agree with you.
We'll get into it. If you don't know, if you haven't been scarred by this episode, or perhaps preventively vaccinated by this episode, the subject matter will become clear over time. I gotta know, is this the first time you've been exposed to Different Strokes?
As far as I can tell, I'm sure I've watched an episode or two of it in the past when I was a kid, just channel surfing. But this is the first time I've sat down and, like, purposely watched an episode from start to finish.
Yeah, this show came from the Norman Lear brain trust. Norman Lear is known as this incredibly kind of progressive showrunner, producer. He's behind All in the Family. I think he did, like, Moving On Up in the Jeffersons as well. He had his hands in a lot of pies, and he wasn't a showrunner for this, but he was one of the producers. And I guess he had a personal mission. He had Conrad Bain, who plays Mr. Drummond on this show, had been starred on, I think, Maud, and he had a personal vested interest to find him a new vehicle for TV. And this show's kind of the result. Did you have any questions about Different Strokes, the concept, the premise, or whatever that I can maybe help with? Because I imagine a lot of millennials, Zoomers, etc., are probably going to be a bit lost at sea here.
Yeah, he seems like a rich man who's adopted two black sons. Is that the premise, basically? He lives in New York or something, I assume.
The premise is Mr. Drummond's housekeeper had some kind of terminal illness, and on her deathbed, she asked Mr. Drummond, who is very wealthy, lives on Park Avenue, to adopt these two young boys from Harlem and take them into his house with his daughter, Kimberly. He was a widower. That's the setup. These kids had no parents after some tragic, untimely death. And I forget why the father was out of the picture, like whether he preceded her in death or he was just, gone, whatever. That was the setup. And there's a lot of kind of like, you know, fish out of water, cultural clash, show. Like, I guess this show is pretty famous for establishing the rules of Very Special episodes. It wasn't the first. I did some research during the season, and apparently that episode of All in the Family where Edith almost gets raped, I guess that was like the very first time that the sitcoms tried a Very Special episode. But Different Strokes is known as an early pioneer and had some of the most infamous examples, and they dealt with like racism, the teen pregnancy, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, and as this episode is going to center on, child sexual abuse. So trigger warnings for all of this.
Not pulling any punches with this one, that's for sure.
The other thing about this show is it was kind of a cursed show. All of the children would go on to have just terrible lives full of like drug addiction and prostitution, untimely death. I don't think any of these kids made it to 40. The kid that played Arnold, who is, what was Gary Coleman, They didn't, I don't think they knew this at the time to cast him, but he had some kind of congenital issue that just, he never grew up. He didn't, you know, he kind of stayed forever a child in terms of stature and even kind of looks. And he died in, I think, Vegas by falling down the stairs and having a big hematoma. He had lots of health problems, kidney failure. Todd Bridges, who plays his older brother, you know, was in and out of prison, cocaine abuse. I think he's the only one that's still alive of the main cast. And then Dana Plato, who played the daughter, after she left the show, she couldn't find work, got mixed up in drugs and alcohol, tried to resume her career via Playboy, got pregnant young with a rock star, lost her child to him in custody because of the drug. It's just, and she ends up over ODing at 36. It's a really, really, really grim kind of legacy that this show has, which is unfortunate.
It's sort of like in Greek tragedy. It's like having too much attention of the gods is a curse.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't unique to child actors of the time. I mean, if you've heard anything about the stuff that like Corey Feldman went through and River Phoenix and who's the girl from E.T., Drew Barrymore. If you push a kid in front of the limelight before their brains are done cooking, it can sometimes cook their brains.
Yeah, Hollywood's not a great place for children.
I guess especially Gary, that like his mom, dad, and manager robbed him blind. He got less than like 20% of the total money that he earned over this like 8 or 9 year span when he was emancipated and kind of always struggled to, you know, do other things. Like, what are you going to do when you're essentially typecast as a kid? You're never going to grow out of that role. So he kind of just, you know, did commercials and kind of cashed in on his fame until his early death too. So yeah, it's a real bummer. It's a real bummer that this beloved hit show was so rough on its cast members. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are you ready to have some fun now, kids? I got a banana split for you and some cartoons you won't believe. I don't know. This might be the show that breaks the format, man.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Any other questions that I can give unhappy answers to?
No, I don't think so. Oh, it starts off nice and cheery in a bicycle store.
Yeah, we had, and also I thought this was impressive too. We had Conrad Bain, the dad, giving a voice, a very special voiceover. We leaned, you know, dressed in character, addressing the camera, saying that this is difficult material that families should watch together and discuss, and kind of like, you know, warning people that this is not going to be your ho ho ha ha type of episode. And also I want to talk about the theme song real quick. This is an all-time classic, you know, one of those theme songs that kind of tells the story of what's going on. It's catchy, it's an earworm, and it was written by Alan fucking Thicke. This guy?
yeah
He's the dad on Growing Pains. I don't know if we're going to have a very special episode out of that. I can't remember what all we picked out. Father of Robin Thicke, the Blurred Lines dude.
Yeah.
And I guess he was kind of famous for writing these ditties. He wrote one for The Facts of Life, which is it's an official spinoff of this show. Also, he did the theme to like Wheel of Fortune and a bunch of other like classic TV game shows, hosted a few himself. So, yeah, I had no idea. Alan Thicke. Crazy. It's like John Tesh writing the Olympic theme and the NBA theme. It's like, what? The Entertainment Tonight guy? So, yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
But yeah, we open up in the bike shop. The kids are all excited. They've been renting bikes from this Mr. Horton for weeks. And he says, you know, Mr. Drummond, I feel guilty. Keep taking your money. You should invest in a long-term bike purchase, which gets Arnold all excited. And his dad agrees to buy one for his birthday. It's coming up soon. And then Mr. Horton asks Arnold if he'd help pass out flyers to all his friends at school, because he's got a big old bike sale coming up and he wants to spread the word.
Yeah, starting with a little child labor on top of belaboring a child.
It's not unpaid, though. He is dangling a handlebar-mounted radio as a reward on top of the sweet new bike. And as a child of the 80s, I can't imagine the luxury, the status you would have with a fucking bike-mounted stereo unit on your handlebars. That must have been That must have been just some King shit.
It doesn't seem like a great return on investment. Like, hand out these 20 flyers that your schoolmates are just going to throw out instantly and we'll give you a free radio. But I guess there are some ulterior motives involved.
Yeah, I think Mr. Horton's got other returns in mind other than the sheer profit motive. and there's a couple of, like, you know, there's like, it's funny because, like, Mr. Drummond's worrying about all the classic things that dads worry about, all those strangers. You know, if you're riding a bike around a neighborhood, you meet a bunch of strange, weird people, you know, completely oblivious to Mr. Horton. And there's even a couple of, like, foreshadowings where he's like, you know, Arnold, if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And he's like, well, if you keep giving me these presents, you can scratch me all over. So,
yeah, Arnold, a little on the nose.
Arnold, submissive and groomable. Mr. Norton takes note.
Yeah, exceedingly groomable.
So we move on to the next scene, which is Arnold. He's at school. He's struggling to pass out flyers until his friend Dudley, turns out he has the gift of gab, shows him how it's done, gets all the flyers passed out, and he says, hey, the only thing I'm asking in return is for you to hook me up with one of them bike radio deals.
Right, yeah, because what the school needs is even more flyers passed out. I mean, yeah. It's little kid math. Like, I did all this for you, and you get a free radio. Why shouldn't I also get a free radio? But it doesn't. How many free radios does this man have?
Well, it depends on how much clothes the kids are willing to take off, I guess. But, I do wonder, like, what kind of, you know, I do wonder about the guy's operation. I understand that they're trying to squish an entire months of grooming into 2 half-hour slots of ad supported television, but it still went pretty fast, it felt like. I do wonder about his operation. Like, is he just like every kid that walks in, he's just trying to butter up, or is, you know, there's just is this, you know, like he's already got his tentacles around the family and he's comfortable and now he's trying to reap? I don't know.
Well, there in the next scene, there is a kid that exits from the back room in the bicycle shop, and he's like, "Don't tell your parents about those extra candies I gave you."
Yeah, when Arnold comes back the next day to just he just wants to lay eyes on his bike as he's coming home from school and tell Mr. Horton about his massive success. We do see that kid getting free candy coming from the back, saying, "Yeah, just keep it between me and you. Don't want you to get in trouble," right? He invites Arnold to celebrate with him. It's like, you know, you're such a good salesman, you should get a treat. And he offers to make him a banana split in the back room, which turns out is a apartment fully furnished with all the toys, candy, comic books, and video games a young boy could ever want.
Yeah, there's all sorts of cool stuff back there. There's like an arcade. Not an arcade, a stand-up, you know what I'm talking about, like a video game console.
Do you understand how insane that would be in 1982 to, like, have an adult who's got all these, like, video, he's got an Atari 2600, he's got, I don't know whether it's Joust or Defender standing up there, but this would be, like, unbelievable for any child.
Right, yeah, it's too good to be true, almost.
And, you know, I don't remember this about Different Strokes, but I guess Arnold has got like a big sweet tooth. He thinks with his stomach a lot. And
he seems to be an eater.
Yeah, he leans into this with this like double decker, triple scoop, banana split supreme with cherry on top. And
what more could you ask for?
Yeah, and he's they exchange mutual admiration, and he says, you know, you could stop by every day after school, ride your bike. I mean, it's practically already yours. Why should you have to wait your birthday? You know, just again, keep it between you and me. Don't want you or me to get in trouble for spoiling your dad's surprise. Put some hands on, you know, after he warms Arnold up, puts his hand around his shoulder, says, we're going to have a lot of fun together, you and me.
Yeah, it starts with the small secrets, folks.
Yeah. Just don't, you know, just leave your mom and dad out of this. It's cool. So right away, Arnold's resolve is tested because he goes home and he's late. He shows up almost late to dinner, and he's not hungry, which sets off alarm bells. and he has to lie to his dad to cover all this up before his buddy Dudley comes over and he gets to tell him how cool Mr. Horton is.
The big flag there being the I'm not hungry thing, and yeah, like the red flags are flying at this point.
Yeah, he's trying to make things up on the fly. He's like, oh, I was at Dudley's house. Oh, that's weird. Dudley called to see where you're at. Oh, that must be why he wasn't there. You know, like we crossed, like ships crossing in the night.
Yeah.
The way Arnold describes Mr. Dudley's back, or not Mr. Dudley, Mr. Horton's back room, like it's like Disneyland crossed with heaven or something.
Yeah, I've died and gone to Disneyland heaven.
Yeah. And the boys are really excited about checking out his place together tomorrow. And that brings us to the next scene where Mr. Horton really shifts the grooming gear up a couple notches. This time he slips some porno mags amongst the comic books on his coffee table and introduces the boys to the idea of the beauty of the naked human form.
Yeah, this is...
Go ahead.
This is where I realized this was going to be a special episode. They're not pulling their punches here. He's just pulled a porno mag out from under his couch cushion and mixed it in with the comic books. Like, yeah. I was starting to get uncomfortable.
Yeah, and the thing is about the... Then he talks him into doing a semi-clothed photo shoot under the guise of playing Tarzan while he snaps pictures of them with his pictures, the boys with their shirts off and whatnot. And what... I was like, when I was watching this, I was like, because obviously they're still doing the laugh track. This is the patently offensive thing about the very special episode, is the audience is laughing at these jokes, but they have to know where, I mean, maybe the audience is just super fucking naive in 1982, but like, they got to go with the jokes, which I don't know, on balance, I guess I kind of think like if I'm a child watching and like all these innocent, quote unquote, innocent things are happening and the studio audience is going, oh, ooh, no, it would be like, what the fuck? It like really sells that this is a really, this isn't a scary experience up until it is, you know?
Right. The laugh track in this was kind of baffling, especially at the end of the first episode when it just keeps going. I'm like, stop laughing, people.
Yeah,
this isn't funny.
Yeah, like, you know, some polite claps, some laughs at the kids' pratfalls, just to keep selling the concept, I guess. But yeah, he also has this like creepy little peephole where he can see.
Yes.
Yeah, and I guess that's when he knows to turn it up and turn it off. See unaccompanied children.
He can see from his apartment into the bicycle store to scope out what's going on in the bicycle store.
Yeah. It's also like this is what I was saying. Like, I think this is a pretty good episode because, like, it felt like a plausible way for these adults. Again, it's in high speed, but the arguments they'd use on children, like, you know, nothing to be ashamed about bodies, and think about the times you've been to the museum and you see all those great Greek statues and they're always naked, and you know, there's nothing to be and look at these pictures and skinny dipping. That's good, clean fun. Look at all the fun that these people are having. Oh, it's a naked picture of me. Oh, how'd that end up? And he's. You know, it's clear to what he's trying to do, but he's doing it in a way that's like, I don't know, like putting the kid's mind at ease, you know, that and also making him feel adult.
Right. Yeah. He's this will come later, but like the, you know, we're all adults here. You can drink some wine.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, you know, Arnold identifies the magazine as a dirty magazine, and he's like, it's not dirty, it's just adult, and you don't want to be a kid, do you? He's like, you know, it just seems like he's working on the kid's ego, and just kind of, you know, and also always emphasizing the secrecy, you know, you don't want your parents to find out,
because...
Then they might get in trouble for giving you all these free gifts and all this free candy. And don't you know kids in France drink from the time they're out of the womb? I mean, he's got all the excuses, right?
Yeah, it probably is like a pretty good representation of something like this that could happen in real life. Of course, it's turned up to hyperspeed because they have to get it done super fast. But I think you're right in the fact that, like, they handled this maybe kind of well, at least compared to some of the other stuff we've watched this season.
I also say that the guy who plays Mr. Horton, Gordon Jump, is probably better known as the station manager for WKRP in Cincinnati. I think this is a pretty brave performance, right? Like, to willingly portray a plausible pedophile on the hopes of helping thousands of children. You know, it's and I also know that he was worried about being typecast as a funny guy, and so he kind of did this darker role. But like, yeah, like it's, you know, when you're putting out the cast calls, like, hey, we need a you know, a Captain Kangaroo, Mr. Wizard looking pedophile.
Right.
How about a Gordo? What do you think? Like, geez.
No, I was wondering, like, who in their right mind would take this role?
Yeah.
I want to be giant creep this week that everyone's going to watch. Again, we're talking about the numbers that these shows used to pull in. Probably everyone watched this.
Oh, yeah. This was like, it just, you know, it's getting, it's 20 million people a week watching this show on NBC. It's a smash pot. Like I said, it's super popular. I lived in the whitest part of the country. We were watching this. There's a picture of me wearing Arnold Drummer's picture on my chest with the "What you talking about, Willis?" You know, his catchphrase. It was huge. I remember watching this with my kid. I remember my parents sitting me down and talking about it afterwards.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I remember my dad used to do. I remember one time, like when I was 6 or 7. My dad came home and he like out of nowhere started role playing, like, what would you do if a stranger came up to you in like a van and said, "Hey, I got some puppies in here. Do you wanna see them?" I'd be like, "Yeah, I want to see those puppies." And he's like, "No, it's like he's like, dude." And I was just doing all the wrong things. It's like, yeah, puppies and candy. That feel. So it's good that I guess my parents had a teaching tool like this to help educate me, because my dad, heart in the right place, but wasn't really connecting with material.
That's hilarious.
So yeah, he also did we mention he's plying with the children with wine too? You
know, yeah, he starts getting them with the wine.
Because
that's what they do in France. Yeah,
it's a new business relationship. This is what people do when they're in business. And we get just as the clothes are coming off and the pictures are snapping, we get a "to be continued," which,
yes,
again, the audience really lost her mind on that one.
Dude, the audience goes bananas. It's like standing ovation, uproarious applause, and it's just not appropriate.
It's a big event. You know, they're playing their part. They want to make sure the innocence is sold so it can curdle later in this part two, which we're about to get into. We'll be back to talk more about why is Mr. Feeny a car after this quick break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
For Prestige, me and Aaron are still extending our Shogun Afterglow with part 3 of our discussion of the 1980s TV miniseries. Last week absolutely shocked our sensibilities with Lord Toranaga doing the tango. What delights and horrors will await us this week?
Then for Pulp, this Friday join us for our latest prep session for House of the Dragon Season 2 as we take another look at the key differences between the text of Fire and Blood and the on-screen action for Season 1, and what they mean for the characters, story, and setting. Get your Valyrian steel sharpened for the new season.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
And now we're back with more. Why is Mr. Feeny a car? We are still at Mr. Horton's shop, still in mid-photo shoot, when he hands the camera to Arnold and says, "I'll be the lion. Dudley, you ride on my back."
Yeah.
And they're really having a good old time getting into it. And then who but Mr. Drummond appears at the shop, which Mr. Horton sees through the peephole. Turns out he's there to settle up with the impending birthday gift.
Mm-hmm. We get a great classic credit card transaction with the carbon copy paper and you got the imprint of the credit card on there.
the knuckle buster is what we used to call it in retail.
Okay.
Because when I was working, by the time I was working retail, like, you know, my one of my first real W-2 paying jobs is working at Walmart. We still had those on hand for when the machines went down, but it was always like, oh, Jesus Christ, we gotta get the knuckle busters out. But yeah, the old classic credit card machine. What a wonderland of fraud it must have been in the late 70s, early 80s.
I'll just make three copies of your credit card.
Yeah. I'll give you the shittiest one and I'll keep the best for myself. Yeah, I don't get any sketchy employees here. They're going to be stealing these carbons or copying down the numbers. And
yeah,
good Lord. Good Lord. If you have a machine that can emboss plastic, you too can steal anyone's credit card information.
But he took his signature, so everything will
That's
be
true.
All right. I'm sure the credit card company will be comparing closely the signature to the one that they have on file.
So while Mr. Drummond's up front and Mr. Horton is like visibly uncomfortable trying to, you know, oh, I got to close up. I got to get back to what I'm doing. The kids, you mentioned this in the pre-show banter. I didn't even pick it up, but the kids somehow knew about the peephole.
Right, yeah. I think maybe they saw him look through it earlier.
Oh, right, the spy, Mr. Drummond. Right, so they get nosy. They see it's Arnold's dad, so they're like, "Oh, we don't want him to catch us with wine on our breath. So we're gonna cheese it. We're gonna sneak out the back."
Yeah, they skedaddle.
Yeah. So Arnold makes it home, and his brother and sister are very suspicious about the size of the wad of gum, because that's the other thing Mr. Horton said. I got plenty of minty gum and breath mints, so your parents will never know about the wine on your breath.
Yeah.
But the older kids know. They smell it right away. And Arnold swears them to secrecy. He kind of pulls a DJ with him, where he's like, hey, I'm going to stop doing this right now. Don't worry about it. Don't want dad to overreact. And, you know, they have the sibling solidarity.
He does pull a DJ. That's exactly what he does.
Yeah. It's funny how much of the same beats, like, you know, it's like, oh, we got a kid that's not eating. That's interesting. I was going to swear my siblings to secrecy about the, but you know, that's family dynamics, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have brothers and sisters. We sometimes had pacts and alliances and secrets that we kept from the adults. Deals were cut.
I don't think I ever did with my sister. I think we sold each other out to our parents nonstop.
Ah, you did the you did the game theory. You just always betray, you know?
Yeah.
me and my brother and sister played the superior tit for tat. Like, that we would go along with whatever the last action was, but yeah. It's also an interesting thing where he like begs off kissing his dad when he comes home from work because, oh, you know, I'm getting too old for that stuff, dad. And really, he's just afraid that there'll be liquor smelled on his breath.
Right. Yeah.
Also, the other thing, the pop culture note, is his brother makes him swear in his E.T. alarm clock because E.T. was almost bigger than Jesus in the early 80s. Like, I wasn't allowed to watch it. I can't remember exactly what reason my mom said that, you know, I couldn't. It's somehow against my religion, but holy shit, kids went gaga for E.T.
I have to confess, I have not seen E.T.
Well, it's outside your generation gap.
Yeah, it is kind of a maybe I missed that one by just a couple of years, something like that. I'm sure there's people my age who would be tearing their hair out of me saying that.
I've only seen it once. I saw it.
Oh, okay.
And I saw the shitty one where Spielberg had rotoscoped all the guns out and replaced them with walkie-talkies poorly. So I didn't get it. But, you know, I saw it when I was like 28, 29. So I guess I wouldn't.
You missed the magic.
Yeah, I did. I just saw, like, I mean, it's like, this dude looks like a chewed up Tootsie Roll. I like, everyone talks about, like, oh, what a great alien design. He looks alien, but still, I'm like, no, he does. He looks gross. He looks gross. He sounds gross. I don't get the appeal. So there,
yeah.
I'm gonna give you some Gen X cover for your millennial issues. I'm just,
right.
I'm knowingly hating on E.T., you know?
Okay.
Fully informed.
One of these years, I'll watch it. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. You're how old's your daughter?
She's 11.
She's almost too old for it. And that's the thing about kids nowadays. Like, my son's got this thing where if he can see film grain, he considers it an old movie.
Yeah, so that's fair.
It's a big lift to get him to watch something pre-2000. I have to really be like, no, this just really holds up, and I got to pick my spots because, yeah, once they get turned into high-def video games and movies, it's, yeah, what is this blurry shit?
Independence Day and on only for him.
Yeah, and Independence Day might be a little too stop-motion, poorly composited for him. I don't know. I don't think really? I've ever seen that one either. Yeah, I don't know. That's, like I said, that was a big one for my kid childhood, or older childhood. But so, speaking of formative experiences, the next day, the boys come back to the Mr. Horton shop for more fun. He shows them the pics that he snapped of them the day before, which they're impressed with. And then he invites them to watch cartoons, which turn out to be X-rated.
Yeah.
Arnold's increasingly uncomfortable with the whole scene. When the wine comes back out, he sees himself back out, leaving Dudley all alone with Mr. Horton.
Yeah, now we've got a real Amber Alert situation when we've got just one kid alone with the creep.
Yeah.
I was starting to get real uncomfortable.
I don't know if the buddy system would work in this case, but...
it's better than nothing.
Yeah, and again, like I said, my only criticism for how they approach this material is they did kind of like, you know, it's like, you know, from my understanding of these child predators and the way they groom, especially young kids, is like they're a little bit more careful. This probably take place over weeks and months, slowly gaining the family's trust and the kid's trust until they completely betray it. But you know, they're doing the best they can. Two episodes of sitcom.
Yeah, at least they gave it two episodes.
Yeah, it worked a lot better that way.
They didn't cram the conclusion in during the what's essentially the credits like Boy Meets World did. They gave it a proper two episodes.
And this is where the audience laughter kind of like you could excuse it as like playing along with the concept. This is where it gets uncomfortable because you look at the kid's face and talking about the pantsless mouse and what he's doing to the other mice. And, you know, the audience is still eating it up. And like when Arnold, he says something about, I can take, because he had Boston cream pie. That was what he's trying to win Arnold over with. He's like, you know, I can enjoy my pie on the road. And the audience is just still, it's like, you know, just yucking it up. I think there's some there do be an appropriate ooh as the scene closes. Yeah. You know,
we need a couple more emotions from the audience besides just silence and laughter. We need some oohs.
Yeah, we need some gasps. We need some hissing. We need some you know, tutting and shaking heads because you know, I don't like the way this old man's talking about playing Neptune King of the Sea, involving lots of water and time in his bathtub. This is going bad places.
It is going bad places. And when I'm watching this, I am crawling out of my skin with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of blew my mind this episode.
And you know, God love the boomers. Their brains full of lead. They're in their 30s. They're sitting on the couch trying to watch this and talk with their kids. Like, you know, I'm not going to excuse all the shit they did, but what the hell do you do with this, you know?
It's a good starting place. It's a good place to start this episode. Gets the conversation going.
True. I wonder how many kids or the parents just forbid them from watching this episode because it's inappropriate, you know, even though, like, they address this in-universe in the show, but... Yeah, I mean, nothing going to save you from shitty parents.
No, that's unfortunately true.
You know who's not shitty parents? Mr. Dudley and Mr. Drummond. Because Mr. Dudley comes over and in a very calm, cool, collected manner says, Mr. Drummond, going to have to ask you not to give my son any more wine. Like, I'm never going to let Dudley in your house again. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you, white man? It's like, you know, coming to you as equals, just, yeah, I got a concern, you know, not super pissed. It's just a sip of wine, but can you not give my kid wine? And Mr. Drummond's like, I thought I didn't know anything about this wine. I'm not giving kids any wine. And they soon find out that they gotta uncover stuff. So when Arnold walks in, it's the full court press. Brother, sister, father, all aligned at getting him to spend. He flips on Mr. Horton pretty quickly.
Yeah, brother and sister pull a Stephanie and snitch.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're like, you know, this is getting out of hand. We can't keep the sibling omerta up under these circumstances.
Yeah, and he does flip on the bicycle shop owner.
You know what's crazy? Todd Bridges, who's Willis, I guess he talked about in an interview later on that this was a particularly traumatic episode for him to be filming because, unbeknownst to anyone, his publicist at this time was sexually abusing him.
Oh my God, I believe it.
Can you imagine filming these scenes? No, that and this shit's going on behind closed doors. And
no.
Like, what the cognitive dissonance you must have been feeling and facing? Jesus.
No, I cannot imagine that.
But yeah, Mr. Drummond really is ears, and I think he's also really cool about how he handles this. Like his son sits there and says, "Yeah, he's." Things, you know, kind of getting sketchy. He was showing us pictures of naked people. Oh, how naked. And kinky cartoons. Well, what do you mean by kinky? And this is legitimately funny. Ryan's like, you know, Dad, I know you told me all about the birds and the bees, but there's nothing like what these mice were up to. I thought that was, in isolation, a pretty funny line.
That was the joke of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, the joke in the pedo episode really made it. and then Mr. Drummond, he's kind of like considering his options, but he finds out Dudley's still down there in the clutches of Mr. Horton. He's like, that's it. I'm calling the cops.
We're going. At first, he's like, I'm going down there. And then he thinks better of it. And he's like, we should call the cops first. And that's where I think this episode excels in its messaging of what to do in a situation like this. Call the cops. Call the cops.
And they'd have a call, a good call to action towards the end of the episode we'll talk about. Speaking of the cops, they show up in force with Mr. Drummond. Mr. Horton is trying to desperately close his bicycle store for the day. And since he was unaware, they caught him apparently to just a treasure trove of incriminating photo and video evidence. Plus, Dudley, who is in the bathroom, I presume getting sick because Mr. Horton has given him a feel-good pill.
Right.
On top of the Jesus juice.
Escalating even further with pills now.
Yeah. And he tells the authorities after his dad says, it's okay, son. You're not in trouble. I'm not mad. You can tell the cops whatever happened. He says that Mr. Horton tried to touch him. And he gets on his knee and looks his son right in the eyes and gives him a hug and says he loves him very much. Again, the parents on this are putting on a fucking textbook on how to deal with this sensitively. And again, the audience has the good manners not to do any laughing or guffawing. It's mostly respectful silence.
Yeah. Well, where was the awe? We needed a awe right there.
Yeah. I think they saved a few for the final scene. he impresses upon his child that it's not his fault, that he's not mad, he's not going to be punished, he's not being blamed, he just loves him and he's proud of him. We're going to wrap up this very special episode with the denouement, where the cops are in the Drummond's living room with the whole family, brothers, sisters. They explain how child molesters work, how their psychology works.
Yes.
Make sure to know that, and this is like uber fucking progressive at the time, like that being gay is not synonymous with being a pedophile. They have nothing, no relationship, that these people prey exclusively on children, and that they also mentioned that these children are very lucky to have such loving, supportive parents, and they're going to be able to bring this guy to justice, and also praise Arnold for being cooperative with his testimony.
Right, yeah, his overly detailed testimony when it came to all the food items he received.
Yeah. And that's the other, they also, like, you know, Arnold's like getting embarrassed about all the sex talk, and he's like, you know, am I too young to hear this? And the cops and Mr. Drummond's like, no, you need to know all about this, because child molesters prey on naive children. And they also bring up another question, I think. This is also, like, I don't know whether they have Mr. Rogers consult on this or what, but like the dress to child's fear of, like, okay, you see all this and the parents handled it all this, but like Arnold's got the next question, like, well, how do I know who to trust? And, you know, you can't trust anybody out there. Mr. Drum's like, you can trust most people. It's just, you got to be careful about the ones that he talks about, wants you to lie to your parents, Yeah. Try to get you to do things that you feel are wrong. And then Brother Willis, maybe speaking from personal experience, says, also beware those people who really push into gifts, coming on too strong, that love bombing thing, that bringing it back to Boy Meets World. Yeah. And he's not still going to get his bike, still going to get a radio. He's told he did a good job. His dad's proud of him. And he also says, you know, I don't like what Mr. Horton is doing in the bike shop, but some hugs and kisses are still okay. And I think that's when the audience breaks out a few aws.
Yeah.
And that's a very special episode. Mr. Drummond comes on once again to flash, like, if you know of any inappropriate sexual attack around children, inform the local authorities. I think they shouted out a couple resources. I don't know how parents got in touch with resources before the internet. There's no phone numbers or anything listed, but... I don't know, call the cops.
Yeah, that's what, there's like a card that basically said, like, if you suspect anything's going on, please call the cops. We cannot stress this enough. Call the police.
Yeah, I wonder, and there, I looked into the history of this episode, and apparently there were several instances of children seeing this episode and then giving actionable information to police on pedophiles. Like, it happened.
Really?
A handful of times were publicized, and the kids and parents crediting this episode. So this episode did good.
Good work, Different Strokes.
This wasn't a funny episode, but this is like, again, this looms large in every Gen X or elder millennial's memory. And I did think it was praised at the time for being well-written and a sensitive portrayal of material. And I think it holds up. Like, there's not many changes I would make if I was shooting this episode today, where I wanted to, you know, drag my funny show through the very special waters mud, or very special episode waters. I don't know what you think for the way it handled the introduction of the material and its prescription for what to do about it. What kind of grades are we handing out here?
Well, if we're grading on a curve, it's probably an A compared to what we've dealt with so far in this very special season of Feeny. Yeah. Like I said, I watched this kind of like peeking through my fingers. I was surprised with how hard they went.
You watched it in a live streaming audience. That was
I did too.
how was that experience?
I think it traumatized my Twitch chat. We all went through it together and we came out stronger. I know at least one viewer went and got some alcohol afterwards to soothe the nerves.
Mm-hmm. Numb the pain, self-medicate. That's healthy.
But, and in terms of like, the episode actually being proactive and trying to do something, like I said, I think this episode really excelled when they were like, call the cops. And they specifically mentioned, like, I was going to go down there and bust some skulls myself. But the police said if I had done that, it would have given him time to to destroy all the evidence. And they wouldn't have a case against him. So don't do this vigilante style. Do get the police involved. And I think that's probably where this episode really, really shines.
They even... Like, I feel like there was, like, the cop turned right at the camera and said some parents even blame their children, which could scar them for, like, they're, like, kind of chiding, like, the parents, like, the ones that would be, you know, kind of shitheads about it. They're, like, priming them, like, don't do that. You know, be like Mr. Drummond and Mr. Dudley. That Dudley's his kid's name. I'm calling him Mr. Dudley because I don't know, but be like those guys. Because the temptation to want to, like, go down there and just fucking settle it. Has got, you know, with any parent, it's got to be like one of the first things you think about. Like, I'm going to kill this motherfucker.
Yeah.
You just fuck up the cop's job. Hopefully they won't fuck it up.
Right. Then it is in the hands of the cops who also have to not screw it up. I'm sure there's very special episodes that they watch at the police station about how to...
A very special episode of Cops.
Yeah.
I know we do, we have a lot of fun on Cops, you know, but the time we're going to try to take things serious. We're going to try to, you know, take a sober look at how we as police officers can help protect. I
this
doubt
one's
it.
About...
There's no very special episode of Cops.
About handling evidence.
when it's not when it is and is not permissible to plant said evidence.
Fruit of the poison tree, they call it.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I'd give this A's across the board. I'm not even sure if I would grade it on a curve, because my memory of this is like very scary. And I remember like, you know, being intimidated, because like you can tell when your parents are a little amped up about stuff. And, you know, and I was expecting this to kind of be a cringe fest. But no, I was impressed with how. Again, like, yeah, it's like it's tough. It's like talking to your kids about sex. It's just there's no feel good easy way about it. But and back I think parents are a little bit more aware about this stuff now. But back then it wasn't something people talked about. So giving parents like educational material that's actually good information. It's not watered down caffeine pill bullshit. It's not just everybody hold hands and it's going to be okay at the end. It's like.
Yeah,
no, you got to do some parenting. You got to do some good citizen work. You got to, you know, the more proactive you are about talking about this stuff with kids, not just sufficient to talk about the birds and bees, but also talk about the fact that people could. Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
I agree. I think they did a good job.
I don't think that very special episodes happen much anymore, and I do wonder. Maybe it's just that everyone's got better information, and the schools are doing a better job. But like, I was thinking of like, has there ever been an update to this kind of thing? Like, does every generation of children? Did you have a very special child molester episode of your favorite show growing up, or they steered clear of all that?
I don't recall. I remember very special episodes of Blossom. I feel like Blossom was a special episode heavy.
Yeah,
TV show. But no, I don't know if kids are getting very special episodes. Is there like a very special episode of Mr. Beast on YouTube?
Oh God, yeah, that's what the kids are watching now. Yeah, a very special episode of Fortnite with Ninja.
Yeah.
I guess Ninja's having a very special episode right now. He's talking about skin, because I just found out today that he got diagnosed with carcinoma. He's like skin cancer. And he's like raising cancer awareness. So yeah, I guess kids are still getting the very special stuff. It's just their favorite streamer now.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
The other thing I want to praise about the Bicycle Man is, again, we talked about Gordon Jump, and, you know, I don't know if you want to call it brave or not, but it's a risky role. I want to praise him for like, yeah, this guy's not a creep. He was like apparently a very nice, kindly man. There was no weird vibes, and Mr. Drummond could in the whole family, like, he just looks like a kindly old man. It's literally like Mr. Wizard. He looked a lot like Mr. Wizard, who was a, you know, like the Bill Nye of his time. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't like, you know, jumping right into scary stuff. It was all appealing to what kids are comfortable with and excited about. And I thought it was interesting that the police even explained that a lot of this child molestation comes from a place of like deep identification and love with children. So they do know what children like, and they do know how children like to play and see things. And that's what makes them excellent predators, unfortunately. So yeah, I was pretty impressed in retrospect of this episode.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways it could have gone really wrong, and they walked a tightrope, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is the other thing. Is like, I guess, like, I don't know, I'd maybe take a letter grade off for the audience's reaction, but I can almost understand, because they're essentially selling the illusion of everything's okay. Again, if the audience was freaking out, the kids at home would be like, I don't understand. He's just like, what's wrong with the Sunday split, and what's wrong with you know, comic books and cartoons, and, you know, obviously when the nudie mags come out, then I think the laughs could have stopped once the porno mag came out, but I don't know. Anyway, do we have other Different Strokes business to talk about? Any other last words?
No, I think we've covered it fairly sufficiently.
All right. Before we get the feedback, I want to tease next week's episode. We're going to be doing Punky Brewster, season 2, episode 16, Cherry Lifesaver. And I understand, I haven't seen this one. This is one of the few that I hadn't pre-seen in my youth. This is more my sister's era. But I understand it's about a small child getting trapped in a junkyard refrigerator and almost asphyxiating themselves.
Right. That'll be a nice change of pace.
Yeah, yeah, the terror of junkyard refrigerators and children getting trapped inside. A little lighter material for next year. But we'll get the feedback. If you want to send feedback, it's feeny@baldmove.com. Also, before we do that, Jay, where can people find you if they want to have deeply uncomfortable classic television watching experiences with strangers? Where do they go for that?
That's a very precise synopsis of what we do on my channel, which is BlueJStreams, blue_J_streams on Twitch. We watch TV pretty much nightly, and we have a good time. It's a good hang, chill time.
Of course, all that information is linked in the show notes for your convenience. Feeny@baldmove.com is for feedback. Let's get to the first one. John from Skipack, Pennsylvania, says, just listen to your coverage of the classic Saved by the Bell episode. Not sure who, but someone mentioned that they thought Zach was secretly smart but played dumb. It's probably you. You're the lore master of the Saved by the Bell. John says, get ready for your head to explode. He outscores Jesse on the SAT exams, and it ruins
snap.
Her. It's sad slash hilarious. Keep up the great work, fellas.
kind of
that is a shocker.
Jesse.
That is a shocker.
Yeah, he's, well, yeah, for the SATs, because it's not like the SATs measure street smarts or anything, although it would be great if the SATs did have a section on street smarts.
Right, right.
Like stuff you can't learn in the books.
Like you scored a 700 on math, a 653 on in your writing, reading, and you scored a negative 50 on,
right,
you know, knowing the right place to be downtown after midnight.
Yeah, or the opposite's true. You get that full ride to Harvard because you aced the street smarts section.
Yeah,
of the
yeah,
SAT.
Yeah, yeah. You were able to successfully negotiate a trade for marijuana in the Bahamas without being scammed by a resort employee. Congratulations. Yeah. We would love to have you at MIT.
You could probably use a couple of people like that kicking around
true.
MIT.
True. Out of the box thinking. Next up is Lisa W. says, accidentally found Mr. Feeny. I'm hearing that a shocking amount, and I love it. Listen to your episode of Family Ties and Tom Hanks, one of my favorite co-stars ever, and I still use the quote, when in doubt, X always equals 8. Anyway, cooking dinner and now listening to Saved by the Bell with Jesse on caffeine pills. You provide some background info to say the storyline was watered down from the original of her being hooked on speed. But there's no way they could do something like that on a kid's show, right? Well, return to Family Ties, my friend. She directs us to Family Ties Season 2, Episode 6, called Speed Trap.
Oh, no.
The synopsis, Alex turns to methamphetamines to get through a particularly stressful period of exams and scholarship applications. He Jesse songs it. For real.
Wow. Wow. It's even the same premise of trying to get through a stressful period of schooling, huh?
Well, you know, that's probably why a lot of students get hooked, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's,
if you didn't come
again,
by
the MIT campus is just riddled uh-huh. with people negotiating for trucker speed.
If you didn't come by meth honestly around the trailer park or the truck stop, you probably got it abusing your ADD medication, right? That's probably what people are doing now. But I did not know that. Thank you for turning that to our attention. Still glad we did the Tom Hanks, but I would have loved Michael J. Fox on speed. Once again, if you'd like to send feedback to Why is Mr. Feeny a Car, feeny@baldmove.com. That's going to wrap it up for this week on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car. We'll be back for a very special episode of Punky Brewster as a very special season of Feeny rolls on. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jay McCain. Hey, Knight, Mr. Feeny, whatever your name is, hit the very special ejector seats. Kit!
God, we gotta get back to some Knight Rider, man.
Yeah, man.
You're losing it.